I'm Rob. Wondering how to implement this game? Well, let's break out the staff solution. So, let's first head down to the init functions that we told you to implement first. First one we'll take a look at is init paddle. All right, so remember that we want the paddle to be exactly centered in the x-axis. So we need to figure out where that should go. Given the width of the board, which is also hash defined up top, we need to subtract out the paddle width and divide by 2 so that the center of the paddle is in the center of the board. Remember that the x-coordinate refers to the top left corner of the paddle, and so this is exactly where we want it to be. The y-coordinate doesn't matter as much because we can place it wherever we want. So we instantiate the paddle, we set the color to black, we set fill to true so it's a filled in rectangle, and we then add it to the window and return the paddle. And that's it for initializing the paddle. It's going to be similar for init scoreboard. So we're going to initialize the label. We're going to set the color to light gray. You can pick whatever you want. We're going to set the font to Sans Serif 48. Could also pick whatever you want. We'll add it to the window. Now this send to back isn't really necessary. It's just in case something else happens to overlap the label. Then when we use detect collision will detect the other thing before it detects the label, but that really shouldn't affect us in this program. Finally, we have this update scoreboard function that we wrote. So let's take a look at that. Now here, we see something that's almost identical to what we saw in label.c. So we have a label, a character buffer of 12 characters, which is just enough to handle any integer, negative or positive. Then we use sprintf to copy the points into that buffer. So now s contains a string representing the number of points. Finally, we set the label to that string, and then we need to center the label in case we've gone from like 9 to 10 points and we've shifted a bit. So we calculate the x and y coordinates of the label, which will get the width and the height of the window, although we could also just use the constants width and height hash defined up top. We also get the width and height of the label and divide that by 2 to center. And then we use set location to actually put it in that location. So that's it for init scoreboard. Okay, so now init ball is going to be very similar to init paddle as well. We see here that we're going to be using new g oval in order to instantiate a new ball. And here we're using 2 times the radius as the width of the ball and 2 times the radius as the height of the ball. Now, also for new g-oval, the x and y coordinate that we pass in is going to refer to the top left of the ball, which is actually outside the ball itself. So in order to get the ball exactly centered in the board, we need to pass width divided by 2 for the center, and then subtract out the radius to push the push the actual center of the ball into the center of the board. And we do the exact same thing for the y-axis, except using height instead of width. So that places the ball in the center, and this instantiates the ball, set the color to black, fill in the ball, then finally add it to the window and return it. And that's it for initializing the ball. So now let's take a look at init bricks, which is slightly more complicated, but it's pretty similar to init paddle. Now, first we need to figure out the width of each brick. Remember that we have a constant called cols, which specifies the number of columns of bricks that we have. So we're going to determine the width of a single brick by taking the width of the whole board, subtracting out the size of our gap, which is hash defined up top and refers to the number of pixels that should be between each brick. And so we're going to have a total of gap times cols blank pixels in a single row. And that will also refer to some blank pixels to the left and right of the left column and right column brick. So subtract out those blank pixels, leaves us with the number of pixels that bricks are actually using. And then we divide by cols to get the number of pixels per brick. So here we define an array that just specifies the colors we want for each row of bricks. If we had more rows of bricks than colors that we specified, we'll see that we'll just loop back around and use red again, and then orange and yellow and so on. So as the pset spec hints, we're going to loop over all rows and columns of the bricks. But before we loop over the columns, we see here that we're specifying the Y position of each brick in that particular row. We could also move this into the second for loop, but then we'd just be doing the calculation over and over again when we don't need to. So the Y position of the brick is going to be margin, which is hash defined up top and just refers to the space between the top of the board and the start of all of the bricks. And we're going to add to that the row that we're on times the height of an individual brick plus the gap that is between each brick. So this is also a vertical gap between each brick. So that gives us the y coordinate of the brick. So here, we're going to calculate the x coordinate of the brick. Now, we have gap divided by 2, since remember before I said that at the left side of the board, we're going to leave a little space. So gap divided by 2 is that space, and then we're adding to that the column that we're on times width plus gap, where width is the amount of space that a single brick takes up, and then gap is the space between each brick. So that calculates the x coordinate of the brick. Now we just need to instantiate the brick given that x and y coordinate using width that we calculated before for each brick and brick height, which is hash defined up top. We set the color of the brick. Notice we're using our colors array and we're passing in the row that we're on mod num colors, which is going to make us wrap back around to red if we have more rows than colors. Finally, we'll fill in the brick color and add it to the window. And that's it. So that's it for all of our initialization methods. Now we need to look at that while loop that you had to fill in. So here we see that this is our while loop that is going to continue until game is over, which either means we've run out of lives or we've run out of bricks. So first thing we have is a wait for click. So just the game waits for us to actually click before the ball starts moving. Then we're going to decrement lives. So if we had 3 lives, now we're down to 2 lives. We're using our third life. We're going to center the ball. So now this isn't really going to help us on the very first life we play, since the ball is already going to have been centered from when we instantiated it. But we see when we end up losing the life and loop back around, then we're going to want to recenter the ball from the bottom of the board back to the center. So now here we need to generate the x velocity of the ball. And as per the spec, we're using dRand48 to generate some random number to specify the velocity. We're adding 1 to that since we just want a velocity in the range of 1 to 2 instead of 0 to 1. Finally, we're using dRand48 again in order to determine whether the ball is going to move to the left or the right to start off. So dRand48 returns a random number between 0 and 1. And so by asking if that's less than 0.5, we have a 50-50 chance of switching the velocity of the ball to be negative. Finally, we set the vertical velocity of the ball to just be some constant. We choose 3. And now we have another loop. So this inner loop is going to continue. Notice here, while bricks is greater than 0, so if we run out of bricks, we've won the game and we can break out of this loop. And while get y ball less than height minus 2 times radius. So what this is recognizing is if the ball happens to go past the paddle, in which case you've lost a life. Looking inside this for loop, we have the checking for a mouse event. And so if there is a mouse event, that means that we want to check to see if the mouse was moved. And if the mouse was moved, we want to have the paddle keep up with the mouse. So to do that, we calculate the new position of the paddle, which is going to grab the position of the mouse, which grabs the position using the event that we were passed. And then we're going to subtract out paddle width divided by 2, so the paddle stays centered on the mouse instead of the left side of the paddle saying centered. So now we also want to be sure that we don't go over the left side or right side of the board. And so here we're just checking if the paddle would be off the left side of the board, just stick it to the left side. And here we're checking if the paddle would be over the right side of the board, just stick it to the right side. And finally, we actually set the location of the paddle. Now, if there wasn't a mouse movement, that means we're going to want to move the ball. And so we already have the x and y velocity of the ball, and so we move it. But now we want to detect a couple things. So here we're detecting if we hit either the left or right side of the board, we want the ball to bounce. And so in that case, we set the x velocity to negative x velocity. If the ball hit the top of the board, then we also want the ball to bounce, but now we want to change the y velocity. Notice we don't have a condition for the ball hitting the bottom of the board, since that was already captured up here in this while loop. Finally, we want to detect some collisions, where if the ball hit either the paddle or the brick, we want to do some special case things. So if there was a collision, in which case object will not be null, then if the object hit the paddle, we would just want to bounce the ball. And here also, we set the location of the ball to just above the paddle. Notice we're taking the X position of the ball and just reusing that. But here, we're getting the Y position of the paddle and moving the ball above the paddle. This is a special case so that the ball doesn't hit the paddle, and then before it's able to move off the paddle, another loop goes around and it thinks it's still on the paddle, and so the Y velocity gets set back to negative, and then the ball just kind of sticks bouncing on the paddle. So, if we did not hit the paddle, then we also want to check if we hit the brick. And so this is how we can check to see if we hit a brick. We need to check for this because we may have actually hit the label and we don't want to remove the label. So if we hit a brick, we can remove that brick from the window, decrement our count of the bricks, increment our number of points, and now we need to update the scoreboard, which is exactly the same as we saw before when we saw a init scoreboard. But now we're just updating the scoreboard since we've changed the number of points, and it should now display that we hit one more brick. And finally, if we hit a brick, we also want to bounce. So finally, we pause just so that the ball isn't moving super fast and we can actually hit it with our paddle. And that's pretty much it. So now we would loop back to the top of this while loop and continue until either we lose a life or we run out of bricks. What happens if we lose a life? Then we're going to exit this while loop, and we'll see we'll loop back up to the top of the outer while loop, in which case we're going to execute this setup again. And this setup is going to have us wait for a click, decrement our number of lives, recenter the ball, recalculate an X and Y velocity, and then resume the game. And so that will continue until either bricks ends up being less than or equal to zero, in which case we've won the game, or lives is less than zero, in which case we have lost the game. So once that's the case, we break out of that while loop, and we reach here where we're going to wait for click before exiting the game so that the game doesn't just immediately close on us. And finally, we'll close the window, and that's it. My name is Rob, and this was Breakout.